Very good morning to everybody here on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. A couple things going on this morning. You have two intelligence chiefs testifying, both of them in the news here recently with evidently requests made by President Trump to them. And to back off the investigation. So I have some comments about that. But obviously the biggest news is out of Manchester, England. And I would tell you that for those of us who've lived with IEDs and dealt with them for a long time, and I would tell you, for me, going back to 2004, and just... Iraq was so different from Afghanistan in terms of suicide bombers. You lived with it every day. And it was miserable because the Iraqis who were doing that, they were good at it. They were good at getting in amongst people. And, you know, the worst ones were when they would have multiple suicide bombers. And one would detonate themselves, and then the first responders would show up. And, you know, there'd just be complete, you know, utter chaos. And then, you know, you'd have either a car bomb or another suicide bomber walk in and blow up first responders. I mean, that's how sophisticated they were. To me, when you look at what happened in Manchester last night, and it's a little bit of a tribute to the intelligence services and security apparatus around the world that... you've seen the implements being used in suicide attacks being what? Trucks, cars, knives, not firearms for the most part, and not explosives. And that's a huge win in terms of preventing that stuff not falling into the hands of the wrong people. What caught my attention as I watched the news last night and this morning about it, again, and having seen hundreds and hundreds, you know, of post-blast analysis presentations that EOD guys put together, what caught my attention is you need a big, big IED to kill 22 people. And if you there's two components to the IED. There's the blast, the explosion. And then there's the shrapnel inside of it that causes, you know, obviously that causes additional injuries. And so when you think about it like that, we used to go through this in Iraq whenever we do recruiting events. And the problem was this: wherever people congregated, you were a target. Now you could push that further away from your recruiting site and therefore save the recruiters, but the recruits themselves that were coming, we're going to be subject to, you know, being blown up at some congregation point. So what better units learned to do was almost do it in a 360 and or at least a 180 and have multiple routes of ingress. Okay, so there wasn't one congregation point. But even then, you live with a suicide bomb, and then yelling. You know, you had Iraqis on bullhorns yelling at people to spread out. And I remember one instance where they shot and killed a suicide bomber because he was acting different from everybody else, and he didn't follow their directions. So they shot and they killed him, and sure enough, he had a vest on him. But that's as good as you can do when somebody wants to walk into a crowd of people and blow themselves up. Last night, you know, if you say, well, the intent was inside of a venue like that to go ahead and detonate himself, he was turned away by security. So plan B is, and it could have been plan A all along, knowing that there would be security there, but plan B would have been, to wait till enough people gathered at a point, maybe an entrance to a subway, maybe a bus stop, and then go ahead and detonate it there. Okay. Now, if people are in close proximity to the bomber, they absorb much of the blast and much of the shrapnel. If they're more spread out, the shrapnel, you know, travels and misses more people. So to kill 22 people, that's a big IED. So the questions that, you know, I think those of us who would, who have lived that life would ask, where did they get the explosives? Where did that come from? Because that's a huge question. Was it smuggled in? Was it something they bought off the commercial market? How did they get this device? Because that's a huge, huge change in from, again, driving a truck into a crowd. As barbaric as that is, that's difficult to do in terms of finding somebody that'll do that. You know, just as this suicide bombs, if they can put it on a vest, they can certainly drop it off as a backpack and walk away from it. Now, the report I saw said that the head constable in Manchester said that they were confident that the suicide bomber was dead. Whether they found his head, normally, you'll find all of that. You'll find the remnants of that person's body. You know, like I said, the head, arms, things like that. You'll find remnants of the detonator and things like that, all very quickly. So, and then we'll see what gets shared, because most of this will be kept very tightly in terms, because they won't want to release anything but the most general details, so they don't tip how this was made, so people don't copy it. But that, to me, is the biggest concern, is this was a powerful, powerful device to kill that many people. Okay, and so if it's like I said, if the people are packed in, to be able to kill that number, that's huge. That's huge. That's a big explosive device. So anyway, for what it's worth, we'll talk about that this morning a little bit. Tom Drowdy is going to join me here in a minute, and we'll talk about the president's trip to the Middle East, and then Marine Corps Times reporter Jeff Scogel wrote an article that we were talking about yesterday, so I called him, and he's going to come on and talk about it. And that is and you'll hear him talk about it, because we recorded the interview last night. But he talks about the genesis of the sentiment in the Marine Corps that begets this animosity towards women. And what he breaks it down to is an animosity from men who perceive that women want to be treated equal, but they don't go through the same training. And you've heard, I think, Will Cosentini, you know, talk about, hey, the British Royal Marines, everybody does the same thing. There's an egalitarianism there. And so what Scogel looks at is, okay, you pass you pass MOS standards at the School of Infantry for infantry Marines. And then you go to the Fleet Marine Force, and we're both Lance Corporals. I have to do 21 pull-ups. I have to do 23 pull-ups to max the PFT. You, as a female, have to do 7. We compete for promotion. Is that fair? Or is that system biased against me and tilted towards you so you can get promoted? And does that system, that skewed system, does that generate this feeling that you're not as good as me? So we'll talk to him about that, and then the gunner will join us. So hopefully. So the United States Marine Corps Band says good morning this morning. So good morning to you. Tom Drowdy going to join us next.
so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
All right, we'll check the weather real quick. 63 and cloudy in Quantico. 74 in cloudy at Camp Lejeune, 66 in Granbury, Texas. Up in North Dakota, 50 degrees and cloudy skies. Everybody's got cloudy skies. 29 Palms doesn't. 78 and sunny right now. Camp Pendleton, cloudy and 60. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy, 73. Okinawa, dark cloudy, 76. At the home of all marine radio, Fallujah, 100 degrees on the button and sunny skies. At the home of all marine radio, mostly cloudy, pretty morning. 61 degrees, looking for a high of 75, so California, beautiful weather coming through here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tom Drouty joins us on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Thirty on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you. All Marine Radio continues. Joining me from Florida is retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Droughty. Sir, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. Just great. Good to hear your voice and good to be with you again.
Well, it's been too long, so I apologize for that. I just saw something that made me... I'll say sadly chuckle, but former CIA Director Brennan testifying in front of the House Intelligence, the Senate Intelligence Committee, where it might be a Joint Intelligence Committee, I'm not sure, but he was asked to what end, what were the Russians trying to do? He said, well, they were trying to incite and inflame the partisan fires of the American political system. And what went unsaid was knowing there is no restraint to that. And I thought about that for a second, and it made me, I don't know if sad is the right word, but our political system can't help itself but to burn itself down. And there's a bit of Russian genius in all of that, in terms of meddling. All you have to do is fan the flames, to get them to attempt to annihilate each other. And therein lies the operation. So interesting comment this morning. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's just, I guess a continued sad commentary of the divisiveness, that exists where, elected officials, and I understand politics and party loyalty and all the rest of it, but you know, it's without trying to bring tears to your eyes or anybody else's, or as we used to say, grab you between the ribbons and the shooting badges. I mean, we're Americans first, and this divisiveness can do nothing but damage our country. I mean, we've got to start pulling together, Mac. This is serious stuff, and if there's any doubt about that, just take a look at what happened yesterday in England. And we're fighting a determined, many times brilliant enemy, who has no hesitation. You know, think of the target. The target there were primarily young girls attending a concert. I mean, they had no military background. There was no ideology as part of that. That attack was designed totally to shock and terrorize a nation and the world. And with that kind of an enemy, we've got to stop this bickering and one-upsmanship and all the rest of it, and start, you know, really truly pulling together as I know we can. And we've had tough times before, but you know, we've got to get serious about this business of being an American and you know, supporting and defending the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we've got plenty, you know, in both those categories. So, you know, excuse the rant, but. I'm just really running out of patience with this this business of I hate you because you belong to a different party, or you're against all that is right and good because of either the D or the R that's after your name. This has got to get better. And once upon a time it was. We had a time when there's a collegiality between the parties. I mean, they wanted to win elections and to govern, and I certainly understand that, but it was done in a way that was not the attacks against individuals, the ad hominem attacks, are the ascribing of horrible motives to somebody because they belong to a different party.
I think that what cures that is national service, but I don't know. It's going to take something incredibly horrible to go wrong in this country for that to be enacted, because they won't do that of their own volition. So it's a sad comment, because how do you change one's perspective of their own nation? And I would say I would lobby. And I don't know if I'm romanticizing this, but, you know, you go back to the days of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan fighting, but sitting down at night and having a drink and talking about how you pushed it down the road. There was no sequestration. That never happened in the history of the nation. And so what was there? Were they different people? Did they have a different experience? Did they feel different about the nation? And, you know, maybe a part of that component was most of the men had served. They had been drafted and they had served. And so they had taken an oath prior to being elected. They had seen, you know, different cultures in boot camp and lived with them and grew in that experience. So I just don't see us, you know, I don't see the human capital that is able to live up to that. You know, to include our current president, you know, he, you know, whether it's the way he, you know, the self-inflicted gunshot wounds with the way he fires the director of the FBI, the way he asked him to lay off an investigation, you know, which could be completely legitimate if you can, you know, he suffered enough. Is there a reason to go forward with this? You know, and I mean, maybe if it's as harmless as that. And then, you know, the news yesterday that there's two more, you know, that the approach two more intelligence directors and said, hey, you know, could you push back on this? Either he's incredibly naive or he's got something incredibly to hide. And I don't think and I don't think he's naive. And so you watch this theater play out and you just want to grab your head and your hands and go, make it stop. Make it stop. And again, I don't believe Hillary Clinton would have been any better. It would have simply been a different set of secrets. And so, it's to me, it's pretty discouraging.
Well, it can be discouraging, and I think you've hit upon one aspect, that national service in whatever form causes us to realize that there's a world outside of our own, and that there's, as you pointed out, different cultures and so forth that the boot camp experience provides of dealing with, working with people that you otherwise would never have met. And then the travel that goes along with it and realization of what a great nation we have. But, you know, our moment to pull together was after 9/11. And for a short while we did, but then it quickly degenerated into a situation we have now. You know, Mac, there's also...
Hey, sir, can I stop you for a second? Can you imagine that, though? We as a nation have digested 3,000 American citizens, or 3,000 people, some that were just in our country and weren't citizens, being killed live on TV with two of the largest buildings in the nation dropped on live TV in front of our eyes by terrorists.
Yeah.
We've digested that and moved on to business as usual. And so, what is it going to take for us to reform our own system and say, you know what, things like national service might not be a bad thing? Is it going to take multiples of 9/11, which is scary to think that we can't reform our own system and do what's best so that we get people that come to government with the idea that, you know what, ultimately I need to compromise. The nation needs to come first. Because this burn-it-down political environment that our current politicians come from, where you're judged on your ability to raise money and have name recognition like Al Franken. Hell, the head of the Small Business Administration is the wife of the head of World Wrestling Federation, you know, World Wrestling Entertainment now, Vince McMahon. You know, so no, if you have money and you have name recognition, you can play in this game. Is that really what is good for the nation? And so I don't know, sir. I don't know how we reform it because we seem incapable of doing so.
Yeah. Mac, not only do we digest 9/11, 9/11 became a punchline for comedians. I mean, shame on us that we valued so-called comedy after an outrageous event such as that. I mean, this is there's a crudeness and a crassness that's infiltrated our society. And the other day I was at a shopping mall with my wife, and just going by, I mean, these are nice stores. And to see T-shirts with an appeal to young women with some of the most outrageous sayings on them, I mean, I would never allow my daughter or granddaughter, if I had any effect over my granddaughter, but certainly my daughter, and going up, that to wear something like that and project that kind of an image, yet for so many folks, it's all okay. I mean, nothing is too outrageous. Right. It's all fine. I mean, there's got to be a sense of, I guess you just call it righteous indignation for what we stand for, but also what we don't stand for. And to me, Mac, it gets back to the family. And when we have, you know, so oftentimes throw away families and throw away kids, then we're going to reap the results of that.
I wanted to have you on this morning, and in addition to talking about current events, to kind of focus a little bit on your thoughts on the president's trip to the Middle East. And so we'll shift gears and do that. Clearly a different tone being set by the president, going to Saudi Arabia, speaking to the Sunni nations in the Middle East. And then I don't know the last time I've seen Benjamin Netanyahu that happy in my life, if ever. Clearly, I thought he was going to wet his pants. He was so excited with the relationship and the direction of relationship that he sees the United States after the Obama administration. You are a student of things Islamic. I'm curious about what you see as, has the president changed something by his actions and just this trip? Has he set a different tone? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Mac, thank you. You know, when I was with USAA, we had a saying that I've used, 20,000 times since then, and that saying is, you can pretend to care, but you cannot pretend to be there. And whether that's being a leader in the Marine Corps or in business or in government, there's no substitute for showing up. Woody Allen one time said 90% of success right. is showing up, and I believe it. So there's also the tremendous impact of signals, and I think the president sent a gigantic signal by making his first trip to Saudi Arabia. Now, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, what about all the human rights violations over it? Yeah, that's certainly the case. But let's get down to the real threat that we have, and that is the threat in that part of the world and the requirement that the to confront that threat is not just a United States obligation. It is an obligation of those countries that are most threatened by the Islamic State. And along with it, those countries that are most threatened by Iran. And so for his first visit to Saudi Arabia, I thought it was masterful. The speech, I thought, spot on in that he brought about all the things that I think had to be said. And the main thrust of it is, you know, this is not a U.S. fight, and this is not a fight against Islam. This is a fight against good versus evil. And I think anyone can understand that situation. As a quick side trip, one that perhaps missed a lot of folks was the establishment of a global center for combating extremism there in Riyadh. I see this as a monumental step forward in establishing there a center that is now going to really engage the terrorism, and again, it's not mentioning any particular kind, combating extremism. So extremism of any kind, be it the Shiite extremism of Iran or the Sunni extremism of Islamic State. Now, this is the center that, you know, has, I think there's like 350 analysts that are part of it that will take messages worldwide and within 6 seconds have an analysis that they can provide to anyone who needs it for purposes of a counter messaging, intelligence purposes, and forth and so forth. But the main point of all of this, Mac, is that this is a step in saying, you know, the United States is part of this, but it's got to be more than just U.S. troops who are trying to combat this. This has got to be a Gulf state effort along with the allies who are supporting it. So long answer to your question, I think the trip has been wonderful. The next visit to Israel, again, couldn't have been better. You go from the Saudi Arabia, the site of the two holiest shrines of Islam, to Jerusalem. And then the next stop is going to be Rome. I mean, the three major religions of the world, tremendous symbolism in all of this. And I think what he's had to say has been spot on. Whoever is writing his speeches, I give them kudos for it. But I think thus far it's been very, very productive. There'll always be the naysayers who say, yeah, but he hasn't talked about the human rights violation. Those discussions I know will take place. As he indicated, he's not there to lecture people. He's there to engage them, as he has, in fighting an existential battle, a battle against the very existence of those countries, of the United States, of Israel, against both the Sunni extremism as well as the Shiite extremism.
The fight here ultimately is what? Because the bottom line is interesting. I had General Allen on and asked him, you know, look, I asked him to comment. Ultimately, there is a Cold War and in some places a kinetic war going on between the Saudis and Iran. Ultimately, sir, is this the beginning of a coalition that will fight to create a different outcome in Syria, and that outcome in Syria will then thwart Iranian ambitions in the region to create a kind of, I don't want to say the Ottoman Empire, but to create the Persian Empire stretching from Iran through Iran-dominated Iraq into Iran-dominated Syria into Iran-dominated Lebanon. That's something that the Sunni nations and Israel vehemently oppose. Is that what we're going? I mean, in theory, is that what we might be witnessing being created?
Mac, I believe it's a first step in recognizing the threat that exists to those countries. And the threat is certainly Iran and all of the mischief, which is a kind of a minor term to ascribe to the things that they have done. But it's interesting that, you know, the adage of my enemy's enemy is my friend. Interesting that Israel and its relationship with the, especially the Arab countries there, now has become so much better because of the common enemy of Iran. And I think bonding together, as I hope will be the case, certainly in the sharing of information, et cetera, that the United States will be a part of, and as the major supporter of Israel, I see, you know, positive things coming from this. It's not the silver bullet. It's not the final solution that is going to bring about peace and harmony in the world, but it certainly is a great first step, and it's better than wringing our hands and leading from behind and all the other things that have been part of our makeup for far too many years. I think it's a great first step, and I applaud it.
Sir, I've got an email here for you. Hey, Mac, I'm watching Fox News right now, and they have former director Brennan on. And he is quoted as saying this morning that he had no knowledge of any pushback from the president relative to the investigation. He also said, and I'll quote the headline, the Russians need to be exposed and incur costs, which implies they need to be punished for attempting to meddle in our election. I'm curious what General Droughty thinks about the high-level leaks he sees, multiple coming from the administration. Sir, it's been almost astounding to watch the information that gets leaked from conversations between the president and the Russian ambassador, that stuff appears in the news within hours of those conversations concluding. Your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree with you more. The leaks in any administration, but particularly this one, I believe have been devastating because, first of all, even if true, they give out of context the conversation or a nuance that takes on an importance beyond what it should be. But secondly, you know, think what that does to those who are assigned the responsibility, the awesome responsibility of protecting our nation, when there's the concern that something that they say in private could show up in a headline in the Washington Post, again, taken out of context. So the stopping of the leaks, I think, has got to be one of the primary efforts. And, you know, but it's aided and abetted certainly by the media. And the media, of course, is going to take advantage of those leaks. But the culprits are those who share information that they should not. Be it classified or be it confidential or be it private, you know, there's a loyalty expected. And the loyalty is not to the person above the Constitution, but the loyalty is if you're serving as a member of the cabinet or one of the staff and so forth, that you're going to do the right thing for the right reasons, again, within the law and the Constitution, but also for the person who whom you serve. And if you cannot do that anymore, it's your obligation to say, boss, I've got to resign. I cannot support this anymore. Rather than the cowardly providing of tidbits of juicy conversations in order to achieve, I'm not sure what, notoriety, fame with the press. I don't know what could possibly motivate someone to betray that trust and confidence. Either from the standpoint of secrets, obviously, which is a criminal offense, but also the confidentiality that I think anyone in a leadership position could come to expect. When I was ADC of the 1st Marine Division or CO of the 5th Marines, I sure didn't anticipate that any of my musings, any of my observations would show up in the San Diego Union or the Washington Post. I mean, there's an acceptance of some degree of confidentiality there. And maybe we've learned our lesson. General McChrystal, who kind of assumed that with the Rolling Stones reporter, which then brought about his downfall. But a long answer to your question, the leaks have just got to stop. And it's a horrible indictment of any administration, but especially this one where that seems to become so prevalent.
Well, I'll take it back to our almost one of the things we started with, which is what the Russians sought to do was unleash this partisan fury that we have going in the United States, and that fury knows no bounds. And so, to me, what you're seeing in the leaks is you're seeing people whose either political agenda trumps their oath to the nation. And they're willing to go outside and leak conversations between the President of the United States and somebody else because they feel that they're wronged. Now, it's interesting. Here's the director of the CIA saying that he's seen no pushback. Yet the I can't remember if it's New York Times or Washington Post, I think they both reported yesterday that he had been leaned on by the president. So and I may have the identities wrong, but it's certainly disturbing that our partisanship affects even our oath now.
Yeah, that's a good description and a damning indictment of those who would allow something like that to take place. I mean, that used to be the beauty of our system was that when you took the oath to support and defend the Constitution, it was that Constitution, and it wasn't for any personal agenda that you could incur or benefit from because of the position to which you were assigned or elected.
Yeah, but I would tell you that the modern day political appointee who has no other service, I would say, believes that that oath is simply just another, it's perfunctory, and just one more thing to be negotiated. Just like the rest of their lives. They don't, and that's why national service or the nation, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. I mistakenly ran for the city council in my hometown of Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Good for you.
When I was on active duty as a reservist. I went in and I asked Colonel Nicholson, do you care if I put my name in for this? I never thought to ask the SJA. And he said, no, Mac. He said, I go ahead. I think that's great. I said, that way when I get home, you know, I'll serve. And he said, no, he said, I think that's great. So I got elected when I was in Fallujah. And so then I got interviewed. We were in the process of chasing Zarqawi at night across Al Anbar. And I used to work at nights helping that effort. And so I got an email from Associated Press reporter, and he said, hey, can you be interviewed tonight? And I said, no, we're in the middle of a whole series of raids. I'm sorry. And he wrote it, and he wrote this thing, this little blurb that said, things you don't often hear from a newly elected political candidate. And he put it in, and it wound up in U.S. News and World Report. We ultimately do the interview, and he asked me why I wanted to run. And I said, well, if you could see what I see here every day, as a reservist, you go home and you go through withdrawal in terms of you want to do more. And I said, so this is my way of doing more. I said, seeing this blood sacrifice, and I used a Catholic word, I said, it sanctifies democracy. I said, it makes it holy.
Wow.
And
good term.
Well, you know what? For a Catholic, it is. It's very pregnant with meaning. It sanctifies. Yeah. It makes it holy. And it does.
I like it.
And so Rolling Stone put that in their year-end edition, I think ridiculing me, you know, for such an absurd statement. But I've always been proud of that. And I think that is a very, unless you know that, what does that oath mean to you? You know? Does it mean something to you that you took that oath? I don't know that unless you're exposed to people truly sacrificing, whether it be just simply deploying and going away, or doing whatever they do, I don't know that that's significant to you. It's just one more little thing that you do when on your way to being elected. And it really, come on, what are we, choir boys? This is all, you know, a big political game of chicken so that we can, you know, win the White House. And I think that is the road to damnation as a nation. And I think that's where we're headed, though.
No, I agree with you. I'm reading a book right now called The American Spirit by David McCullough. And just a superb book. It's a series of talks that he's given, but you get a greater appreciation of where we come from, you know, who we are as a nation, and the guts that it took by our forefathers to get us here, and their selflessness, a term we don't hear very much these days,
right.
You know, who really pledged, you know, their lives, their treasure, their sacred, you know, for this experiment that we're still conducting. And I think once again it's worthwhile for Americans to reflect back on how we got to where we are, not only the good stuff as well as the bad stuff, but you know the basis for the good things that have been produced and what we are capable of you know, as a nation, when we pull together. But it's got to be, again, that selflessness, that desire to put others before self, that is not heard of very often. But as you pointed out, for those who have worn the cloth of whatever service, or those who are in the business of taking care of others, policemen, firemen, etc., who put others before themselves, I mean, this is not a novel notion. This is a way of life, and a proud one.
My guest this morning, retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Drowdy. And so are you in a hurry? Do you have a little bit of time?
No, go ahead.
I want to ask you, I want to read you an email, and then I want to take a break and then come back and continue our discussion. So here's the email. An email, I would say, deals with the conspiracy theories that are chiefly laid at the feet of the Saudis.
Okay,
the title of the email says this: too bad all the mosques built in Europe are by Saudis. Too bad Saudi Arabia won't take a single refugee. Too bad the Saudis are pretty much own our Congress. Why didn't Trump go to Mecca? Too bad Trump sold out everything he said about the Saudis. He told the truth during his campaign. What about the 28 pages? What about Prince Bandar and the other Saudi government officials involved in the World Trade Center? So now we're part of the Iran versus Iran caliphate. I think it should be Iran versus Iraq caliphate contest. Super. Nice orb. I'm not sure what that means. Your thoughts on the whole conspiracy theory with the Saudis speaking out of both sides of their mouth. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we have to understand some basic things. And this is not to excuse any complicity in the horrible tragedy that we endured or we suffered on 9/11. But we have to understand that nations, including our own, don't necessarily have friends, we have interests. And over a period of time, those interests will change, and they then direct the actions that nations follow. And whether it's in our own country with isolationism before World War I, before we finally got into it, isolation before World War II, it was not in the nation's, our country's interest to engage in those wars despite the horrible things that were taking place. And again, Mac, I say this not to excuse any complicity or possible conspiracies that took place to kill Americans. It's just that I think we have to be very careful to start to ascribe motives to other.
I'm not sure what happened, but we lost the connection. So we will go ahead and take a quick break. We'll get Tom Drowdy back on the phone. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So, not sure what happened there, but we'll get him back on and we'll let him finish his answer. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
Are you Mustangs? Listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted rank. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website at MarineCorpsMustang.org, or you can find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them there. Most importantly, join their association and help them continue the great work that they do. That's the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Join it today.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
.07 on the west coast of the United States. We continue. Tom Drowdy rejoins us after my phone system rebooted in the middle of a conversation for no apparent reason. So, sir, with apologies, thanks for hanging in there with us.
Sure, you bet. Well, this is just to test our flexibility, Mac, and once again, we'll demonstrate that we're tougher than technology.
Semper Gumby. So continue your thought about the email essentially is somebody who believes in the Saudi conspiracy behind 9/11 and the Saudis obviously destabilizing Europe, the Congress awash in Saudi money, Prince Bandar, and all of that. Yet, I think there are others that would say, look, we have incredible common interests with the Saudis. They see Iran the way we do. And yet, are there radical elements that emanate from Saudi Arabia? Absolutely. And Osama bin Laden was one of them. So, I don't, what do you make of all of that? And what is your response to people that want to charter the black helicopter, relative to that relationship?
Yeah. I, again, Mac, I go back and I'm not sure where I broke off, but in this notion that nations have interests and not necessarily friends, we have to understand that no nation, at least in my study of history, has been totally four square, 100% behind the U.S., and that is a friend that we could always rely on, always had our interests at heart, and so forth. And let me give just an example. There's no nation in the Mideast that is closer to the United States than Israel. I think we'd all agree with that.
Right.
And receive a great deal of the support from us, tremendous moral, spiritual, financial connection with them. I mean, this is the only democracy in the, I mean, these are all positive things. And yet, when I was in Tel Aviv on a trip, I noticed as we were passing through a square, it was named after Jonathan Pollard. You remember who he was?
Israeli spy.
Yeah. Who was he spying on?
United States.
The United States, yeah. So you say, gee, wait a minute. I thought the Israelis were our friends. Well, they're our friends, but they also had interests. In the Six-Day War, there was a USS ship called the Liberty. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah. We had 9 Americans killed and 60 wounded as a result of an attack by, not the Arabs, the Israelis. You know, what is that? Well, you know, mistake and so forth. But the point is, we can't say because someone doesn't hold or adhere to all the things that we consider our interests and so forth as being our enemy. They are nations that have their own interests. Now, for the most part, we hope that it's a friendly relationship, allies, etc. But to hold to our standard every nation in the world when we don't even hold to our own standards at times. So I'm not saying this to excuse violations, conspiracies, etc. There are elements throughout the world, to include our own country, that have those elements that exist. But to damn a country or to say we can no longer work with them until they eschew all aspects of what they consider to be in their best interest, I think is erroneous. It's immature. It doesn't understand the realities of diplomacy. And I'm not an expert. I'm a Marine, but I certainly have seen what happens when diplomacy doesn't work, and you get into the grisly business of having to execute foreign policy without the support of allies.
Can you explain our common interests with the Saudis?
Well, I think the president certainly did just recently. The common interests are against extremism, be it in the form of the Sunni extremism of the Islamic State or the Shiite extremism in the form of Iranians. And that common interest is not only with Saudi Arabia, but with all the Gulf states that were part of that gathering that I thought was so masterful in its composition as well as the words that went with it. Yeah, we have more in common with the Saudis than we have not in common, and the main thing is the existential threat that exists for that is present regarding both of us.
Interesting. You know how that angers people that would believe in the Saudi conspiracy. Yes.
Yeah, but you know, those who believe, I'll make a generalization here, I found that most conspiracists, those who have conspiracy theories, are going to be angered with just about anything that a lot of people would say. If you don't adhere to that, I mean, we can go back to the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the conspiracy theorists of more than Lee Harvey Oswald, I mean, you know, the grassy knoll, I mean, all of those things. And if you don't believe in that, then you're considered either an idiot or their enemy. And so I guess I'll accept a third category, and that is someone who just doesn't subscribe to the conspiracy theory.
Okay. I'm. Let me ask you this. I think the world certainly needs for the moderate Arab nations, and I would say the Sunnis primarily, to come out and do more publicly and also covertly to stop this terrorism around the world. Is that a fair criticism of this, or is this terrorism that lives in Europe, is it a function of immigration and a disenfranchisement, and then disaffected, psychologically impaired clowns affiliated themselves with ISIS as they leave the planet. Do they have more to do in this area, both publicly and covertly, or is this kind of a European thing that's a socioeconomic issue that winds up taking the face of ISIS, quote unquote? But it really isn't. It's more of a socioeconomic problem. Your thoughts on that?
In fact, I believe Islam has got to take the stand that you described. And I think that's what was part of the message. Again, if you read carefully, listen carefully to the words of President Trump in this regard, and that is the attempt to get Islamic nations, primarily a Sunni, to accept their role in this fight. And that means in the streets, in the mosques, and their government. The problem, and I raised this with an Islamic scholar in my class recently, the problem, as he pointed out, is there is no Pope of Islam. And so it becomes a local, or in many degrees a governmental, because Islam is in many cases a religion with governments, as opposed to most countries that are governments with religion. But there's got to be, and I think you're spot on, an endeavor, whether it's subtle, hidden, transparent, whatever the case may be, but of Islam stepping up to the fact that it is the one that has suffered the most from these terrorists. I mean,
right.
God knows that we've suffered, but the major victims, the majority of the victims, vast majority, have been Muslims. And so there's got to be, I couldn't agree with you more, a response on the part of the Islamic leaders, the government leaders who are Islam, to again, take that step of condemning the terrorism that takes place and then taking the steps necessary to combat it.
Do they have a PR role as well in terms of, because you don't often see, you know, the a joint communique coming out of the Arab world after something like that happened. You know, you don't see the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia issue a statement condemning this in a very public way. We want our Western allies to know that we condemn this. This is not the way of Allah. This is not the way that we as Islamic Arabs live our lives. We condemn this and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Do they have more to do there?
Yeah, they do. And again, I go back to this Global Center for Combating Extremism that has that, from what I can interpret, one of its roles. And that is, in addition to analyzing the messages, also preparing the opposition or the response to it that would fall in the line of just what you spoke, and that is speaking out in a authoritative way against the not only the words but also the actions of the extremists. So again, maybe I'm putting more money on this than I should, but I'm impressed with the establishment of a center, at least the recognition that some unified, centralized effort has to be done, and it's going to be taking place in Saudi Arabia, but with the cooperation and assistance of the other Gulf states. So it's not a Saudi effort, it is a Gulf effort, and again, obviously with the support of the United States. So I'm encouraged by this as a first step to do exactly what you just describe there, Max.
Yeah, I think they have more work to do I'll ask you, explain when we say Islam, you know, many people see Iraq, Iran as all the same. Can you explain the divide there? And it's not a small divide either.
Yeah, well, the major divide, Max, is in Islam, the Sunni, which is the majority of Muslims, and the Shia. Shia, I guess, normally would come to mind
the country of Iran, which is a majority Shia. But also Iraq, strangely enough, is a majority Shia as well. Saddam Hussein was a Sunni running a Shia. And so with his demise, the challenges there. The Iran-Iraq war was so horrible, the 1980 to 1988. Chemical weapons are horrible things, but there was basically a Shia country fighting another Shia country. But so to understand the divide, and it is a brutal, bloody divide, you go back to the days of the successor to Muhammad, and when he did not name one, the split that took place into what we now call basically the two aspects of Islam, Sunni and Shia. And it's again gets back to that aspect of who was determined to be the rightful descendant of Muhammad, and with that again the situation we have now of the split and the bloodshed that is a result of it.
Okay, and that divide is not a small divide. It is the dance. It is I would liken it to the U.S. Soviet Cold War. Everything you see in the Middle East in terms of the Arab world breaks down along those two fault lines, and the fault lines are not small fault lines. They are huge small fault lines. In fact, when we were in Al Anbar, the Sunnis there, essentially Saddam's guys, they would engage us and they would say, "Why are you fighting us? We're your friends. You hate the Iranians. We hate the Iranians. Okay, we don't want an adversarial relationship with you. We want to be allies with you to defeat them. And if you'll just help us, we'll get this thing under control very easily." And we were still de-Ba'athifying the country, and are still looking to try to do the right thing over there. But again,
yeah. Another analogy on a smaller scale, Mac, and one that would strike home to you and me, being Irish and Catholic, is Ireland. With Northern Ireland being Protestant, Southern Ireland being primarily Catholic, although I've read recently that Northern Ireland is becoming more Catholic. But in any event, both Christians, right?
Right.
And yet the split and the bloody war that has taken place because of the Christianity aspect, but because of the political and the power aspect that existed. So, we're both Northern and Southern Ireland Christian, yeah, one Catholic, one Protestant. Gee, why can't they get along? Well, we know that did not happen. So, and it's not a perfect analogy, obviously, but that's the one that in class I try to use with my students to understand, how can you be Muslim and yet hate somebody who's also a Muslim? Well, because of the divide that took place, running a successor.
Christians do it all the time. Christians do it all the time. Interesting.
Well, so-called Christians, yeah.
Right. Well, no, I mean, again, we forget, the bottom line. And that's from the same person who wrote the previous email. "I can't listen to this. I just tuned in. I can't believe you're ignoring the floods of Saudi bribe money rotting Congress. That's a bigger problem than the naive nature about oaths. How many elections has the USA influenced? Obama in the UK before Brexit and endorsing Macron? How many governments have we overthrown? Good luck." That's a dismissive salutation at the end. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm just, maybe I'm naive, but I'm not aware of the floods of Saudi money going to U.S. politicians. I think, had that been the case, at least somebody with the thousands of investigative reporters that exist in our country, somebody would have picked up on that. But in any event, again, with conspiracy theorists, there's not much to argue about, because it's their way or the highway, as opposed to discussing.
Right, right. No, and I think the emails are indicative of that. And again, I'm not saying that there aren't those elements, but I think one of the things that you, with conspiracy theorists, is that they link them all together in a very cause and effect. This caused this, and this caused this, and this caused this, and this caused this, and this caused this, therefore this. When, if you have, I think, experience in those realms, that you look and those things really aren't cause and effect, and that thing isn't very tight, and it's a stretch to link those things. But by doing so, you could certainly draw a conclusion.
Makes things simple. It puts the world into black and white, you know, good and bad, you know, good and, all those things that are easy, to understand, but that's not our fallen human nature. You know, there's good and evil in all of us, and there's good and evil in the nations that we put together and that we serve, and so the hope is that the good outweighs the evil, through various things called laws and regulations and supervision and consciences and so forth. So, you know, it's all a struggle, but it's not all one side or the other.
All right, final question. Your a final thought on the president's trip. Do you think this, at least to me, what he's doing is he's shaking hands, he's introducing initiatives. And I guess the hard, heavy lifting will be done later on. Are you obviously are encouraged by what you've seen so far on this trip?
Yeah. Again, at the very start, the fact that he showed up, he went to the places of greatest concern, of greatest imports, if you will, and that is the sites of the major religions of the world, and with an attempt to bring together people and to not divide. It would be wonderful if the people in Iran, and there may be indications with this latest election, we didn't get into that, but you know, I'm hopeful that the latest election in Iran, the Grand Ayatollah's one, of course, it really makes the calls here, but nevertheless, you know, this could be a sign of some progress in that regard. Again, I'm an optimist, Mac, and I keep thinking that there's some good that can come for this because I believe we have, for the most part, good people who are trying to make it happen. On the other side, the consequences of not making progress, of not improving the situation and letting it deteriorate, is not appealing at all. And a recent exclamation point was yesterday in Manchester, England.
Right. All right. Well, sir, first of all, I appreciate your time this morning. Your scholarly discussion about Islam is something I enjoy having on the program, and certainly your perspective on this trip, interesting. So thanks very much for doing this.
Mac, you're most welcome, and give me a call anytime that I can assist. You're doing great stuff, and I'm proud of you, and proud to be a part of anything to assist you.
All right. Sir, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Semper Fidelis.
Semper Fidelis. That is retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Drowdy. He was the CO of the 5th Marine Regiment. I wasn't really part of it. I just left 1-5, but I was next door. We were a tenant at the 1st Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, and he was the regimental commander of Camp Margarita. So I was a tenant. Anyway, no, I enjoy having him on all the time. He's bright now teaching. He teaches a course about Islam and also, I think, another military history course. So and down in Florida. So my thanks to him for coming on. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and I'm going to decide what we're going to do. There's some interesting stuff going on currently, and we'll see if we might tap into that for a few minutes. But I'll figure that out here in the next few minutes. More of All Marine Radio on a Tuesday coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So whatever you do, stay put. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. farewell promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.